960 Pinder on Twitter. This is Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Welcome to your Monday. Pinder here till Jim Rome at 10. We got a golf tip for you before 10 o'clock. We'll hear from the boys at Grey Wolf. I'm supposed to golf today. I don't know. Too cold. We'll see. That, as well as a lot of playoff hockey discussion. The Flames not only need a brand new head coach, they're going to need a goalie too. And with more on that, Darren Haynes joins us in his usual 9:05 slot. Haynes, how are you today?
I'm exhausted. Busy day cooking for the ladies of my life yesterday, Mother's Day. Being a good man, a good soldier.
Yes, and today?
Happy to be out of the kitchen.
Attaboy. Well done. A couple things up on the website. I had mentioned there was a two-parter on Marc-Andre Fleury. That was erroneously stated earlier this morning. You have a piece on Marc-Andre Fleury where you've entitled it Part 2 because, of course, there was another human with the last name Fleury that had played here. So it's kind of a play on surnames, right?
There you go. Exactly.
Finally picked that up. It's a little slow over here, early in the week. Why don't we start there before we move to the coaching carousel? I have been thinking a lot about Marc-Andre Fleury, not only because he's a goalie that's had success in the NHL and has won a cup, but I would think the transaction price or cost to acquire a Marc-Andre Fleury would be relatively cheap as compared to some of the other options out there. But what are your thoughts when you start digging into Marc-Andre Fleury as a potential trade target? What do you find?
Well, and it's funny you mentioned that. You start with that because that is the question. That's the thing that you never know from the outside, right? We're not the ones, you or I, having the daily conversations with GMs around the league. We don't know the market, how it's evolving, what the asking prices are, that sort of thing. So it's very hard to look on the outside. And one of the questions actually came up over the weekend that I was contemplating is, and I'll ask you this, is the price to acquire on Marc-Andre Fleury more or less than Frederik Andersen?
I think it'd be considerably less because, they're a team in a cap pinch and he's making $5.75 for the next 3 years. And B, I believe they would rather have $625,000 Matt Murray in net. They're already up against the cap. They don't have a lot of money to add guys for next year and they have some holes. I think it's a no-brainer for them to get rid of him because if they don't, the expansion draft, they have to protect him. He's got a no move, right?
Yeah, if that proceeds, for sure. I think that's the rock and hard place that the Penguins will find them in between. So, and I think that's the dynamic. Is Calgary coming calling, begging for Marc-Andre Fleury, or is it Pittsburgh desperately looking to unload Marc-Andre Fleury, or is it somewhere in the middle? If it is somewhere in the middle, then perhaps the price tag is a little more affordable. And I was trying to guess at what it could be. You know, Fleury is still 31. He's still, you know, from a pedigree perspective, 12 years in the league, first overall pick. Is that kind of, I was looking at that first rounder that looked like it might be coming. Now I'm not so sure from Dallas, but is it a late first rounder or early second? You know, Calgary's own second round pick isn't that far away. Is it that pick in a prospect? Is it that pick? Is it a couple picks in a prospect? Just like, what would it be to get Marc-Andre Fleury? And the reason I kind of brought that up is an attraction of Fleury, where the other thing with, okay, so let me just go back the other direction. The thing with Andersen is everybody's looking at what it'll take to get Andersen, but how motivated is Bob Murray to trade Andersen within his division? I think that's a big consideration. It's not as simple as just Calgary saying, let's go get that guy. They also got to be, Anaheim also has to be motivated to sell him to Calgary, to trade him to Calgary. And I'm not sure that's going to be the case. If you look back at the Corey Schneider deal at the trade, from what reports were, there was trade offers that were better, especially from the Edmonton and maybe even from Calgary, that Vancouver passed on to trade Schneider to the Eastern Conference. So you wonder if that won't factor into it. But those things aside, you know, Fleury is an interesting candidate out there who seems to be someone that might be available the way Matt Murray has played. I mean, Matt Murray has really taken over that crease. He's led them. Like you said, that's $5 million in savings if they unload Fleury and go with Murray moving forward, who still is under another year for another deal next year. So yeah, I threw it out there as something to maybe think about. And at 3 years left, at affordable term, I would say, at $5.75 million for Fleury as an established number one, that guy could make all their goaling misery go away in terms of having an entrenched starter instantly just like that.
You know what I do like about it is the term of that deal that's left. The money is what it is. You're going to pay a starter that's any good around that kind of money. So I don't think it's a steal money-wise. I don't think he's outrageously priced. But 3 years is kind of the window that I think by the last year or year and a half of that, you should have a youngster pushing him. And he's a nice guy to either lean on in that third year or be a backup in that third year. But you are going to need to buy some time if you do think that your future is Mason McDonald, is John Gillies. They're going to need some time.
Yep, and I think Gillies, I mean, I think it's Gillies before McDonald at this point. Gillies, as much as it was just a short time, he's older. He's older than McDonald. He did have that 1 month in the AHL last year. I would think Gillies is the first guy to ascend to the NHL over McDonald, but it's going to take some time. And people keep wanting to say, well, we just need a year. Let's just give Gillies a year. We just need to bridge it for a year. Those are all best case scenarios. If you look at two of the best college goaltenders, graduates that have made it to the NHL today, Corey Schneider and Ben Bishop, one took 3 years and one took 4 years in the AHL.
Yeah.
And John Gillies has had 1 month. So I think if you're an organization, your best practice, your best planning is to not count on a guy getting there sooner than later, but to allow him some time and kind of, you know, plan on him even not getting there. I mean, really, is Calgary in a position to just assume a goalie that they drafted will make it to the NHL? That's probably been the track record.
No.
So you bring in a guy, I think 3 years is the ideal term. And like you said, if you get to that third year and Gillies has taken over as number one, well, you know what? There's ways you can deal with Marc-Andre Fleury in that final year.
Yeah, you might have a trade chip. It's a good problem to have if you have two goalies that you like, right? That's what Anaheim's looking at this summer. Oh, what a horrible spot to be in. They're going to probably move Anderson for, you know, something around a first rounder. I sort of think when we're trying to price this market out, you don't know, right? And you said it. We're not talking to GMs, but what you can do is look at recent history. So what was the transaction cost to get Martin Jones? It was a mid-first rounder, right? What was it, 14, 15, or 16? One of those three picks that Boston used. That was what they got from the to get him, right? So
yep.
I would think it's a similar price with Anderson because I think they're similar kinds of guys. They're probably going to be out of their organizations because there's another guy that the other team prefers, but they're good enough to start elsewhere, and they've had sterling numbers over the last few years. So I would think a mid-first round pick would be a reasonable ask from Anaheim. Now, so that's one side, but the other side is, where's the demand for a goaltender as compared to last offseason? We talked about it earlier. Toronto needs a goalie for sure in 2 years, maybe this year. Carolina could be interested in somebody. Calgary absolutely needs one, and I don't know what Dallas does to get out of the pickle they're in because they're paying over $10 million already for two guys that really haven't given them much this year.
Yeah, I mean, Carolina is an interesting scenario because how confident are they in turning over the reins to Eddie Lack? They could be certainly one that would be a candidate. And again, you know, it only takes a couple teams competing. It doesn't have to be five teams. It only takes a couple teams competing to really bid up the services of a available goalie, whether that's a UFA like James Reimer or whether it is a guy like Frederick Anderson.
Yeah. So we'll see. I think for that reason only is Marc-Andre Fleury an attractive target that you could get him, I believe, much cheaper than Frederick Anderson. A, because is he in his prime? Well, he's probably a little past it, but still very good. And I think there's a much greater appetite to clear out that cap space. That's the real asset for Pittsburgh. Moving this guy out is gaining $5+ million. And what changes there? Is there a drop off in performance from their starting netminder? I would think not. There might even be an improvement next year, a full year of Murray versus a full year of Marc-Andre Fleury. So maybe we're out to lunch, but I think you're on the same page as me. If it's a mid first rounder for Freddie Anderson or for Martin Jones last summer, I would have to think it's a second or a couple seconds if you're going to try to go get Marc-Andre Fleury. I do not see the price tag anywhere near Anderson or Martin Jones.
Yeah, and that's where Calgary's kind of stuck in between because they have that pick at 6, then they have a pick at 35. You're kind of in between on what that price tag might be. You don't want to put that number 6 pick in play. I'm pretty certain of that. So then, yeah, you are looking at, well, then how, what else does it take for Anderson? Then you start looking at prospects and, you know, and combining draft picks, it's not easy. Sometimes you can't just buy quality with quantity. So, you know, it will be, we'll just see how that evolves. I guess we'll wait and see, and we'll see who plays. I don't know if they've confirmed yet if Fleury gets back in the net for games. Was it game six. Or whether they keep rolling with Murray? I know Mike Sullivan was non-committal on the weekend, so we'll keep an eye on that one too.
Yeah, I am curious to see what happens there. Wouldn't it be a nice late season audition of sorts for Fleury? Given what we've seen from Murray, I would think that there'll be a lot of people watching what Marc-Andre Fleury does, and if he can win them the series or if he comes in and gets lit up, that might affect your opinion on him, albeit the tiniest of sample sizes. It's a big spotlight right now for him.
But, you know, the thing that Fleury brings is just like I said, he's got that pedigree. He's not coming in here to compete for the number one job. He's one scenario where I think Yoni Yordio could be back with this team, because I don't think they want Yoni Yordio as part of a timeshare, as a 1A, 1B. I think with for Yordio to be with this team next year, I think it's got to be in that type of scenario where they've brought in an established number one. And it could be Fleury, it could be Bishop. You know, there's a few other guys that meet that description. Maybe Anderson. I put Anderson in that boat as well. But, you know, if it's not one of those three, I don't know. Would you be comfortable with James Reimer and Yoni Yordio? I'm not so sure.
Yeah, that looks more of what we've already had. Guys that probably are both better served as backups. I don't know that either is a clear-cut number one. Final one for you on the goaltending front before we move, and I do want to move, so just a quick thought. There was a lot of talk mid-season about Brian Elliott and Ben Bishop. I would think that both the Blues and the Lightning would be not worried about losing these guys for nothing next year, given how central they've been to their two clubs' success, and given that I think the window to win championships for St. Louis and Tampa is right now, rather than, you know, way down the road, we'll collect some assets or get a pick and that might turn into a player. I think they're more interested in winning now than retrieving assets back for these guys. And that's why we're not talking about them in the goaltending picture as much. Is that fair?
Yeah, I would fully agree. And the other, I do agree with that. And the other reason why Ben Bishop is probably under a little bit more stable footing, other than another amazing clinching game performance, was the play of Jonathan Drouin and the ripple effect of that. If, you know, really, to me, Jonathan Drouin has really kind of put Steven Stamkos out of the picture in Tampa Bay. I don't know if I see it Stamkos re-signing there, but Drouin coming in at a very affordable, you know, number contract-wise is certainly going to make room and create space to retain Ben Bishop. So, yeah, I agree on both fronts.
Very good. Coaching front, you've got a new piece. I don't think it's up yet because I was just looking. What's it? What is the flavor? You gave me a little teaser in a text earlier this morning.
Well, as I look at it, you know, and that's the conversation, right? That's the conversation right now. It started just shortly after we spoke last week, was all of a sudden things changed suddenly on the coaching landscape. And so we've been talking coaches more than draft picks. I guess we'll have to get back to the draft conversation. So everyone's talking coaches, and there's a lot of names out there. You know, how do you corral them all? How do you rank them? How do you categorize them? So the way I look at it, I was thinking about this over the weekend, there's really three categories to me. There's kind of the veteran, the recycled coach kind of guy. Like, that's like Bruce Boudreau was a veteran coach that's been in the league for a few teams. Well, he's off the market now, but, you know, we could be talking about Mark Crawford. You mentioned this morning, Randy Carlyle is another that fits into that description. So those are kind of the veteran guys that have been around the league, a few teams. So on the flip side, well, then you also have your kind of rookies or first timers. So, you know, these are guys that have not coached in the NHL. And will, you know, would Brad Treliving be as bold as to bring in a guy, a first-year NHL coach to coach this team and kind of get them to that next level? And those are guys like Travis Green and even a local, you know, within the organization, Ryan Huska, or Dave Lowry looking to jump to the NHL after winning Coach of the Year in Victoria last week. And Phil Housley, Luke Richardson, a couple other names that come to mind, John Stevens from an assistant coach perspective that hasn't had a head coaching game. So those are two of the categories. But for me, where I kind of focus in on is the guys in the middle. This is guys that have had a crack at the NHL, it didn't work out for a variety of reasons. The team underperformed in a couple instances. New GMs came in and kind of brought in their new guys under a fresh start. And these are guys that coached once before in the NHL. Now they're kind of doing something else. They might be an assistant coach. They might be in the AHL and are very keen to get back. And I think that's the category that like Brad Treliving might be looking at, because there are some kind of interesting candidates in that camp. And I kind of look at eight, and it's not published yet. I don't probably have it up probably tomorrow, if not before. But three that came to mind for me is Kurt Muller, Kevin Dineen, and Glenn Gullitson, whose name came up on the weekend as someone that might be getting a call from Brad Treliving. So those are the three. And again, Glenn Gullitson, what's his background? Well, he's been with the Vancouver Canucks for the last three seasons as an assistant. What was his NHL experience? He was in Dallas for two seasons. So that's Gullitson's background in a nutshell. For Kurt Muller, he had a stint in Carolina.
Right.
Where he was, it was in his third year where he let go. He got let go. He was let go at the end of that season when Ron Francis came in there as the GM. So Ron Francis, again, kind of brought in his own guy. And then there was Kevin Dineen, who had a couple of, I mean, he went into Florida to all sorts of, publicity. I mean, he got the Panthers into they won their first division title, made the playoffs for the first time in like a dozen years. It was year three where he got the axe. So those are three in particular that I take a little bit of a deeper look at.
Yeah, and John Stevens, you mentioned, he did have some brief time as head coach, a year and a half, 2 years? He replaced Hitchcock mid-season and then eventually was replaced by Laviolette in 2010. So he'd be another guy with sort of one of those laps, but has obviously won a couple cups with the Kings. I'll add a few more to that list, because guys that have coached once, Ralph Kruger is doing some good work for Southampton in the Premiership Football Club. I don't know that he'd ever be interested again, but everyone seems to really talk fondly of Ralph Kruger, even though it sounded like he got a raw deal in Edmonton, and he might have been the best of the bunch they had there in that spell where it seemed to be a new coach every year. I don't know if there's appetite there. Mike Yeo has now had one lap with Minnesota, and that's it in terms of the NHL head job. And I'd love to hear more on Adam Oates. I don't know why his name isn't front and center.
Yeah, so you mentioned some interesting ones. Like Mike Yeo, I mean, he was in Minnesota for a long time, 5 years. Like, he came in, did a good job with that team, and really, what is the coaching life anyway, right? Like, they're kind of short-term caretakers is the way I see them. You kind of come in, you're 3 or 4 years, move the team forward. It's the fresh voice. So, I mean, to have a 5-year run is pretty, pretty good for Mike Yeo. And what's interesting with him is, where is he right now? He's assistant coach over in Russia with Team Canada, where Brad Treliving is right at the moment. So, he might be the only one getting the informal, maybe formal, in-person interview these days. So, Mike Yeo, I agree with that. And I also, other candidates in that same bucket. There's Scott Arneil, who's been with the Rangers under Alain Vigneault for the last 3 years as an associate coach. Todd Nelson, you mentioned Ralph Kruger. Yeah. Well, Todd Nelson has done nothing but win in the AHL, and most people think he did a decent job with the Oilers when he took over that kind of second half of that season before they brought in Todd McClellan. So he's another guy, if you kind of like that AHL pedigree. Paul McLean, not sure if he's going to get that Ducks gig or whether he's a candidate. Brad Shaw is another one, currently going with St. Louis right now. So there's some names in there where maybe this thing isn't resolved until June, because some of the candidates are still going in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Boy, there's a lot of names. I'm writing them down as you're saying them, and I sort of had a list to begin with. I'm looking at, we're probably around a dozen names here. Like, that's a lot of guys and all varied backgrounds. I like the way you broke it down. You've got the haven't been a head coach in the NHL yet. So that would be, what, Davis Payne, Travis Green, Dave Lowry, that kind of hire, right? Ryan Huska, if you put him on the list. The mid-tier is that we've done it once but not twice. And there's a lot of those. And then the real veterans, which are Boudreau, gone. Carlisle, no thanks. And Mark Crawford, it sounds like he is going to go work with Guy Boucher in Ottawa as an associate coach. So if you're looking for a really veteran guy with lots of experience who's worked in the league recently, I don't know if anyone's out there.
Yeah, I mean, there was a few, you know, ripples across the league when Daryl Sutter said he was not sir. He was, well, uncertain was the word that came out of Los Angeles. I don't know. Once you've kind of moved on, I don't know if that is a scenario here. But what I like about that guys getting a second chance is you always learn a lot first time you do anything in life. Doesn't have to be a hockey job. It could be any job. And when you're hired and fired or let go or whatever, whether you're stocking shelves at Safeway or whether you're an NHL coach, you're going to find out a little bit about yourself and what you need to do differently next time you get another chance or get another job. And so, you know, I think there's something there. And Kurt Muller, very motivated. You know, he was assistant coaching for a long time and really wanted to get back into it. He you know, he had several job interviews the year that just a couple of years back, wasn't able to latch on full time. He phoned David Poile and said, look, you know, can I I'd like to get a head coaching job, and they had just opened one up in Milwaukee. So he went to Milwaukee. He was only there for about probably less than 2 months when the Hurricanes job came open and they snatched him up. So Kirk Muller is very keen. Supposed to be a very good communicator, very positive guy, very upbeat coach. Coaches his guys to play like he did, very aggressive. So I think there's an attraction there. And the other thing that I like about Gullitson, going back to the name that's kind of most recent, is he, you know, Brad Treliving will be able to relate to his track record. Gullitson went and he was coach/GM for 6 years in the ECHL. And when you're in the ECHL, you're very familiar with how the AHL operates. It's even thinner at the ECHL, where you're probably washing the water bottles. You know, you're kind of doing all that stuff, right? So he kind of came about it the hard way, learned a lot in that process. That opened up some NHL doors, and Joe Noondyke hired him in Dallas. So I think Gullitson, you know Vancouver likes him. When they got rid of Tortorella, they kept him. They wanted to keep Gullitson around, and we thought Gullitson might end up maybe even sliding in for Desjardins this year if things continued to go south for Vancouver and they decided to make a move that quickly. So there's lots of guys just who've been there. They took away some learnings and ready to get back after it. And, you know, those kind of guys might be good fits for a team like Calgary, who's got such a young nucleus. You know, do you want maybe kind of one of those newer, fresher voices that may be a little younger? You know what I mean?
I do. And I think absolutely. They're talking about changing the way they play. I think they're alluding to getting more into analytics than they've been, which is to say, you know, getting into it, because I don't think Bob is a subscriber at all. So maybe it is a younger, more open-minded coach, and certainly someone that knows how to deal with millennials. These are the core of this team is a bunch of young guys in Geo, right?
Yep. So, you know, it's something to, and I think the urgency is off now. I think there was urgency in maybe having a job opening for Boudreau while he was looking, because you knew he wasn't going to be on the market for long. But with really two of the four vacancies gone now, and really just Anaheim is the other one that we know of that is open at this time. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if this is maybe something that drags a little bit logistically. It's going to make sense with Brad Treliving so tied up with the World Championships. But also, as we mentioned, some of the candidates they may want to talk to are still going in the playoffs.
Yeah, and you know what? Who knows? If St. Louis loses two, one on home ice with a chance to move on, I don't know that Ken Hitchcock survives. He's been working on one-year deals, and this is get over the hump or be gone kind of year for him. And I think they're going to win that series, but crazier things have happened. Can Dallas win two in a row? Yeah, they've been doing it all bloody year. So we'll see what happens there. Final one for you. Maybe I missed it because it's Monday and I'm a space cadet, but Adam Oates, what do we know?
About Oates? I haven't really sunk my, you know, he's not on my list, so I haven't really done the research on Oates to know whether he would be a fit. I haven't heard that name suggested.
Even if he's keen, right? Like, I don't know that this guy, does he want to be a head coach again? I mean, he's doing a great job on TV. It sounds like he's a skills coach for a bunch of high-end players around the league and travels around and works with guys. I just find it intriguing because Elliot speaks very highly of him. I'm fascinated watching him break down stuff on TV, and it wasn't like he had a bad run. Like, the clubs he coached did well. You know, the 2 years in Washington he had.
Yeah, you know, so maybe how long ago was that? That was just like last year or 2 years ago?
12-13 and 13-14. So
yeah, you know, yeah, he had right. So it was the lockout. The lockout season was his first year, if I recall correctly, and then and then they slid a little bit and missed the playoffs the year after. Yeah. So again, another guy that fits that description of a guy that's a long and again someone that played a long time in the NHL, right? And does that carry some swagger? Like, does that carry a little bit of influence in a dressing room? Those NHL coaches that legitimately can say, been there, done that, that can relate to players. You know, maybe that is something that, you know, is maybe missing from some coaches. And maybe players like to hear that. They put more faith in a coach that's been through the wars, that knows the grind, that knows the travel, that knows the ups and downs. So, yeah, wouldn't you know? He's another one to add to this long list. Boy, you and I are going to be very busy with our interviewing Seriously. Of coaches over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, we'll have to get our notes together and hand them to the Flames. We've done a lot of background work here. Good catching up, Hainsey. I look forward to the piece. Let us know. Send us a tweet out when that's up. We'll give you the retweet and make sure everyone tunes in for that. I think I might have just added to your list of homework too, didn't I?
Yeah, maybe tomorrow or Wednesday now.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, see ya.
Darren Haynes, flamesfromadefeet.ca. Some good stuff on Marc-Andre Fleury there. And as you just mentioned, coming up soon, coaches, second chances. A lot of them out there. And just, you know, the names that we've heard rattled around, some of them long shots, some of them favorites, others dark horses. I mean, just off the top of our heads and through that conversation, Dineen, Lowry, Green, Yo, Kruger, Stevens, Payne, Arneal, Oates, McLean, Muller, Gullitson, Boucher got hired today. Crawford apparently is a done deal in Ottawa. And Carlisle is one we've heard, which I'm on the record as saying I'll jump into traffic if Randy Carlisle gets hired. So depending on your view of me being a living human on Earth, that might affect your opinion on Randy Carlisle getting hired in Calgary. Don't see it. Really don't. So hopefully that's just a buddy doing a solid for a buddy and getting an interview and getting his name out there. And that's it and that's all. And we'll move along and not have to worry about that actually being a real thing happening. We'll see. What your thoughts? A lot of names out there. You probably needed the graph paper and a couple pencils to rip through all the candidates we just listed, but this is what this process is about. The Flames started it a while ago, and we're trying to figure out what they're up to from the studio here. We might be way off, but there's a lot of names mentioned, so maybe that wide net we just cast, someone in there is the next coach of the Calgary Flames. Who do you think? Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Ryan Pinder in the morning, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
We're going to make sense of this. It's very foggy, murky, mucky, but 1,000 candidates for this job in our minds. I'm sure the Flames have whittled that number down. But this is the process, right? Some good texts coming in on the coaching search. Some of them really good, and some of them just attempts at comedy, which some of them are right. Pinder, John Gruden and Bill Cowher are available right now, and they've won championships. Treliving would be a fool not to hire one of them. Could we call them up? What is it? It's game's over between Belarus and Canada. Tree should be free, right, Jay? Let them know that Bill Cowher and John Gruden available. Not sure that's going to work. I like your take on Oates, Pinder. He's always been really good with special teams. We all know how that went with Calgary this year. Yeah, that is dead on. Now, it's probably a lot easier to be good on special teams when you can roll out Carlson, Backstrom, Ovechkin. I know Oshie wasn't there at the time, but Niskanen. Like, there's no question that they had some major weapons. I don't know if Niskanen was there for 1 year or not. It would have been the last year of Oates or the year after that he signed there out of Pittsburgh. But yeah, very skilled, but incredibly proficient. That would not be anything that could describe the Flames special teams this year. So Oates, interesting. I don't know. I don't know that where the appetite is. I really wished we had Elliot today because that would have been a good question for him. He knows Oates, of course. They sit on the desk, break games down together. So he would have better insights than most on exactly where Adam Oates' head is at. Does he want to be head coach again? I don't know. I don't know. Berkey likes big and tough teams. Apparently we need a players coach this time. Who are those candidates? I don't know that I really like this. You're either a players coach or you're a hard ass. Like, is there not some middle ground there? Is this just a black and white thing? You're either a nice guy or you're a bad guy. It's like good cop, bad cop. There's no middle ground. I just feel like that's oversimplifying the situation. You do need someone that the room respects and that will hold players accountable, but you don't need a tyrant. So I don't know which you would, where that hard line between being a player's coach and being, you know, a dictator, where is that line? Is there a line? Probably just shades of gray, my friends. Someone's very concerned with what I shot on the golf course yesterday, Jay, or on Saturday. Saturday, I was 92 on the forest, which feels like about 78 anywhere else. So for whoever was curious about my Saturday round, did not break 90, but it was the forest, which is probably the toughest course in Southern Alberta. So there you go. Wayne Gretzky? Jay, would you be open to the great one coming to Calgary, old Wayner? Funny, we haven't heard his name.
Crickets.
Yeah. I feel like Wayne should be doing what Berkey's doing. Shaking hands, kissing babies, calling his network, helping out a GM. That would be probably where Wayner's best suited. Either that or just maybe do what Messier does. Do some Connor McDavid commercials, something like that. You know how Oates could help the power play Pinder? He could come out of retirement and be the setup guy. Yes, he was a prolific passer. It's like wherever he went, there was a guy that potted a ton of goals. He had Brett Hull in St. Louis. Prior to that, what was it? Was it prior or after when Cam Neely was scoring 50 a year on his wing? You want to see some crazy assist totals for Adam Oates? I've got it in front of me here. 89-90. 79 assists. The year after, 90 assists. 97 assists first year with the Bruins. 97 assists. 80 the next year. Finished his career with 1,079 assists. Yes, he could help the power play right now. You're right. Don't know that that's what he's looking to do. Valid point, though. I'm indifferent to the coach, Pinder. I'm not in the know in terms of who's truly a good coach or not, but a good goaltender would be the most imperative thing to do this offseason. What does that job description look like? Or excuse me. This guy likes Reimer's performance. Tough to read into Reimer. I don't know. Good year? Yes. Played an awful team in Toronto. Looked pretty good. Went to a good team in San Jose. Looked really good. And yet, isn't going to get any time in the San Jose crease. It's Marty Jones's crease. So he sounds like a very good backup to me. Does that solve the problem here? Does it help out a little bit? Well, you can't find a tandem worse than the one they had last year, so it would have to be an upgrade of sorts, but I would aim higher than that. I'm actually hoping for Mueller as a coach after hearing you guys talk about him. Yeah, well, that's Hainsey likes Mueller. I don't know anything about where he would be at in terms of his appetite to be head coach. I did see him in Milwaukee as Haynes relayed the story. He was in the AHL for a while and then jumped at that Carolina vacancy. But I believe it was the Heat played the Admirals, Milwaukee, Nationals farm team, when it was my first year there, first round matchup. And the Abbotsford won that one to take on Toronto in round two. And then, of course, they ran into the powerhouse that was Dallas Eakins. Season over. Not a lot of Dallas Eakin talk. One and done for him? I don't know. I would think Sutter would be great for the Flames, to be quite honest. That texter, yeah, no, no one's ever said Sutter was a bad coach. It was the GM stuff here that got him in trouble. The head coaching stuff, I think everyone was always very, you respect that guy's resume for sure. But I don't know that Sutter's trying to find a different market to play in. I think he's just saying, am I going to coach again? And if I am, I'm going to have to get paid because I got work to do on the ranch if I'm not going to get paid. Like everyone else is getting paid. Boudreau probably getting really big dough. We know Quenneville is. We know Babcock is. Julien in Boston's making good money. A lot of candidates out there. I don't know. Someone wants to talk some baseball, and we have a golf tip for you. We will return on that note. The Blue Jays bullpen remains a tire fire. They're in San Francisco tonight. We'll tee up that series and get you sorted out. Do you ever play with someone who's brand new to golf and you almost feel guilty? Like, ooh, we're going to be too slow. I don't know if we should be on this course. We're going to go to our buddy Justin in, at Grey Wolf. He's got a tip for you this week on newcomers to golf or very high handicappers. Is it still okay to be out there on the championship caliber courses or not? That's coming up next on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Get connected. Text 960-960 to get your voice heard. Ryan Pinder in the morning on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Boy, lots of good stuff on this Monday morning in the 9. Pinder here till Jim Rome in about 11 minutes. Darren Haynes, if you missed that, some Marc-Andre Fleury conversation. Flames need a goalie. Why not him? Certainly be cheaper than going out and get Freddie Anderson, right? I don't know that Elliott and Bishop, there's an appetite to move them where there might have been mid-season when Jake Allen was running the show in St. Louis and when the Lightning were struggling, just fighting for a playoff spot. You're probably more open to moving Bishop at that point. Not now. Whew. 8-2 in the playoffs. First team to round 3. Strahlman nearly back from a broken leg. Stamkos could be back from that blood clot issue. It's a scary team no one was talking about when the playoffs started. So I don't know that they're in a hurry to move Ben Bishop. Expensive, yes. Worth it, absolutely. Go win a cup with them. You're losing for nothing, so be it. If you get a ring, you've won the day. No one's going to get mad at you for losing Ben Bishop as a free agent in the summer of 2017 if you have a parade. They're not far off, man. That's a good team. Canada in action at the World Championships today. They've back-to-back powerhouses they've had to deal with. They had the Hungarians prior to today's game, which, you know, you go from Hungary, that's one of the just absolute powerhouse nation. Today, another very stiff opponent, Belarus. Ryan O'Reilly scored twice, one of them shorthanded. Derek Brassard gets your winner. It was a power play goal in the first period. Canada wins 8-0 over the Belarusians. They did beat the Americans in their first game, although albeit a hoot at roster from Team USA. So they're 3-0 now, atop the tournament standings. Looking at their goals for and goals against, 20 goals for in 3 games. Wow, that's pretty good. They're averaging over 6 a game. Wow. And 2 goals against. 20 goals for, 2 goals against. Pretty good so far. We'll wait till they play another country that actually has had some success in the sport. So we'll give you credit for a soft American win, but the other two, I don't know what we've learned. Probably nothing. Ball talk. Someone texting in regarding the Jays and the Giants. They're going to open a 3-game set at AT&T in San Fran. Of course. Beautiful park. PV against Sanchez. Trying to find this text. Boy, a lot coming in all of a sudden. I would think if you're the Blue Jays, it's game over for Drew Storen in the 8th inning. It's probably the 5th inning and we're losing by a ton. Or, hey, we're up 6-0. This is some time for Storen to work. Or maybe it's just, hey, we need some help cleaning up laundry around the clubhouse. Come on, Drew. Because the high leverage stuff hasn't worked well for him. He's got an ERA of 9. That's every inning he works, he allows a run. That's kind of the exact opposite of what you want out of a reliever, right? So maybe some more Jesse Chavez there. Maybe Joe Biagini, who's had very limited action but looked pretty all right for a guy that was a Rule 5 pickup. Gavin Floyd has certainly earned the opportunity to pitch in more high leverage situations. And frankly, it hasn't worked for Storen. It doesn't mean it won't moving forward. But what it does mean is right now, the way he's going right now, you can't be pitching in the 8th inning if you're winning. And it sounds like that loss last night might have been the final straw. Would not be surprised if they have a lead tonight or tomorrow or on Wednesday that they go elsewhere when they need a right-hander to set up to bridge to Osuna. Good series against LA. Big crowds at Rogers Center. Kershaw was dazzling on Saturday and yet not even his dominant self. He had 10 Ks and it was all right. Yeah. Wow. When 10 Ks is your okay performance, it's the best pitcher of our generation. Gotta be. And some of the bright spots, Pilar starting to nice little run of 15 to 20 games for him in terms of the average. Michael Saunders has given them some good performance in the leadoff spot. Russ Martin showing signs of being a capable major leaguer. That neck issue really bothered him at the plate earlier. But Troy Tulowitzki remains a massive concern. And even Josh Donaldson's in a bit of a slump. I believe he's 2 for his last 20 or so. So that offense needs to roll. For all the knocking on the bullpen, how many times have they had 3 and 4 run leads to work with? Not many at all this year. So every time you go to that bullpen, it's like, zero room for error. That's a lot of stress, high stress innings for them. And they haven't been good outside of Osuna. Jay should be able to get 2 wins in San Fran, maybe even 3 with Stroh going against Bumgardner. Yeah, it's not a bad part of the rotation for them. They will go Sanchez, Happ, Stroman, which is 4-5-1 in terms of how they've rolled in just the order they're in, not ranking how good they are, but those are three of their better guys. I think those are their three best starters. Estrada's actually been pretty good too. He just doesn't have any run support. Anyone not named Dickey, I think Jays fans very happy with in the starting rotation. We will see. It is an 8 o'clock start. You can catch it on Sportsnet 1. Nice late start for us on the western half of the continent. The Toronto folks will either be missing these games or staying up late and being grumpy at work. For us, perfect. 8 o'clock. We'll watch those 2 playoff games, and that's done. Slot over for some Jays. Works perfectly. I was out on Friday, Jay. I was out Saturday and also golfed on Sunday. It has been absolutely brilliant. The Twins and the significant other are away in California getting some R&R, which means I've been golfing like a maniac, and that dovetails nicely into our ATB golf tip this week.
ATB Golf Tips with Ryan Pinder, brought to you by ATB Financial. Come and see some of Canada's best tee it up at the ATB Financial Classic, August 11th to 14th at Country Hills.
All right, so the golf tip this week, it's not always a great time to get a high handicapper or a beginner out on the course, but it doesn't mean that newer golfers or golfers that swing the club a lot more than scratches or you know, mid-handicappers, doesn't mean they can't play great courses. With more on that, we talk with our buddy Justin out at Grey Wolf in the Columbia Valley. Justin Brown joins us, the head pro from Grey Wolf out in the Columbia Valley. Today's golf tip, when you're golfing with golfers of different skill levels, maybe of different ages, what sort of tips do you have, and how often do you run to this at Grey Wolf?
It's a fairly common situation to run into, you know, some beginner golfers or higher handicappers or just people that don't really maybe know what they're getting into at Grey Wolf. It is a fairly challenging course, and any time that I'm on the phone booking tee times and encouraging, you know, beginner golfers to come out, by all means, we'd love to have them out. It's a fantastic golf course. It's a lot of fun to play, but the key is to play at the right time of day. So Saturday morning when we're, you know, at 10 a.m. when we're loading up 180 players throughout the day, we have to keep pace of play at 4.5 hours, and we do a very good job of that over the last 3 years, and we will do that again for 2016 for sure. But that's probably not the best time, and it's more for the golfer. I mean, new golfers tend to feel a little bit anxious as it is. It's a challenging game, and when you have groups constantly behind you and pushing you to kind of keep that pace, and then also our marshals are out there to ensure pace is kept as well. It's extra pressure on the golfer that you don't really need when you're just starting to get into the game. So I suggest 6:30 at night, literally 7 days a week is just fine. That time of day, you're probably not going to have anybody behind you. You can take your time out there. You just play a front nine. If you hit a shot that you're not happy with, if there's nobody behind you, you don't have to worry about it. You drop another one, you hit it again the way you want to, and just kind of work on your skills that way until you get more comfortable with what you're doing.
And if people are looking for more information on the course itself, where do you send them?
Greywolfgolf.com.
Telling you, boys, this is the place for your golf getaway with the boys. For more information there on Twitter, check out the website. Just a dazzling course, a top 10 public course in the country. Pretty cool. That does it for the nine this morning. We'll be back tomorrow. More coaching conversation. We'll talk goalies and two game sixes to react to. Do the Predators and the Stars, live to see another day. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
ATB Golf Tips with Ryan Pinder, brought to you by ATB Financial. Come and see some of Canada's best teed up at the ATB Financial Classic, August 11th to 14th at Country Hills.
Get the f*** out of here.